You were 8 years old, maybe nine. And you remember the moment. In fact, you haven't been able to shake it. You were sitting on the sideline and other people were playing the game. You had just been in and the coach had called you out. And as you were sitting there, you overheard him say to one of the other coaches, "He's just not that good." And something about that statement has hung with you, and even though it was years and years ago, you not only feel the statement, you feel like in some ways you live the reality of those words. You're just not that good. Or maybe for you it was over and over again, whether it was after school and you'd get home and you were sort of scattered about where you'd throw your backpack and where you'd put your shoes, and you overheard over and over again how annoying you were. And so today, whether it's in relationships at work or family or friends, you automatically believe that people think you're annoying. There are things that we've heard in the past that still live with us and are actually deep inside us today. Do you struggle today because of how you were labeled yesterday? We're in the series, we're wrapping it up today, talking about ghosts of Christmas past. And one of the things that I think haunts a lot of people is the labels that we wear in life. What people have said about you all along the way. And it doesn't matter what degree you got or what kind of job you have, or the house that you built, or the car that you drive, or the state of your marriage today, or your parenting abilities. There are things that were said about you that still hang with you. And somewhere along the way, when you were very young, someone taught you this saying, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but..." And it's one of the biggest lies you've ever been told. Because words are devastating. Words often sink deep. And the truth is, words from anybody impact my life, but the words from the people that I know the most and the best are heavier and sink deeper. Judas had to be close to Jesus to even be able to get close enough to kiss him. It's the people that know us the most that when they say those things about us, it hangs with us. And God knew life was like that. Our God is so smart. He laid out in the scriptures, hey, this is an aspect of life. This is a part of life. It's something we have to deal with. And so in the book of Proverbs, which has been called the book of wisdom, the book of Proverbs is chocked full of wisdom, nuggets of truth that you and I can apply to day-to-day life. It's profound. Proverbs 18 says, "The tongue has the power of life and death." Your words have the ability, my words have the ability to build up or to tear down. We have the ability to encourage or discourage. We have the ability with what we say to people and what we say about people. The tongue has the power of life and death. And because of that, what you've been called, what I've been called, matters, and it somehow stays with us and hangs with us. And somehow at Christmas, I think we feel it a little bit more. I don't know if it's the holiday and the fact that we've got to be around people and family members that have said those kinds of things. Christmas is the one time of year, Christmas and Thanksgiving actually, where you have to be around some people perhaps that you just don't like that much. Maybe that's not your story. It's not mine, but I've read about it somewhere, that there are people that in this time of the year have to hang around people that they just don't like them that much. And those labels tend to come back. And it's interesting, even culture has kind of caught up with this and has tried to change some of the labels. Remember back in the day, I don't think they sell these anymore, back in the day, you probably didn't wear them, but did you know anybody that wore husky jeans? That's a label you want to carry through life. You're not fat, you're husky. I wore husky jeans, I'm talking to myself. The tongue has the power of life and death. Maybe for you it was lazy. She's just lazy. Maybe you were called average. It's the label that you wear. Insecure. Why can't you be more secure like your brother? You just carry it with you. Sensitive. Oh, she's always so sensitive. You have to be careful what you say. She's just sensitive. And for some of you, it wasn't just you. Your whole family wore a label, dysfunctional. You carry that with you. And in fact, when people say, oh, their family's just dysfunctional, not on the outside, but on inside, you're kind of like, yeah, probably so. Annoying. And you wear that. Hot-headed. And you carry that. And sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me. It's just not true, because some of the things that were said to you about you, or some of the things that people have called you in your past, it sort of haunts you still today. It's played a role in defining, to a large degree, who you are, what you think about yourself, what you think about other people, what you think about God. You can't imagine. You have the hardest time in the world wrapping your mind around the fact that God could love you, because they've told you and you believe, you're annoying. You're lazy. You're sensitive. You're insecure. But here's one of the amazing things about the whole process. Often with labels, they can be harsh, they can be cruel, often they're unfair, but sometimes with labels, there's a hint of truth. You don't like being called lazy, but you have to admit, you don't fly into each day with a boatload of ambition. You don't want to be called sensitive, but you do tend to react to just about everything. You don't like being called hot-headed, but your temper does get the best of you in moments. And part of our struggle sometimes with labels, part of the reason it hurts so much, is sometimes there's a hint of truth. And we know the rest of the story. We know that there's more. I'm not just annoying. There are some good things about me, but we feel like that this one word captures and sums up our whole life and who I am and my identity. This is what I'm known as. And because of that hint of truth, we feel it even deeper. However, what's true about you now doesn't have to be true about you later. What's true about you now doesn't have to be true about you later. Jesus in Luke chapter 18 is on the path, on the road, about to enter Jericho. He's not there yet, and blind Bartimaeus, he wore the label blind. It's what people called him. It's how they knew him. Blind Bartimaeus is on the side of the road, and he hears the crowd coming by, and it perks his ears up, his attention, because he's used to people walking by. This is the path to Jericho, but he's not used to this kind of noise, this level of intensity. There's something unique about this crowd. And so he begins to inquire as to what's going on, and he finds out it's Jesus. Jesus with the crowd is coming into Jericho. And he begins to call out, "Son of David, have mercy on me. Son of David," and he just can't seem to get his voice to rise above the clamoring crowd. "Son of David, have mercy on me." He gets louder and louder, and the people in the crowd, because it's blind Bartimaeus. Nobody wants to hear from him. It's blind Bartimaeus. Shh, calm down, be quiet. There will be people in your life as you begin to call out to God and seek God that will tell you to calm down and be quiet. But he doesn't stop. He presses above it. "Son of David, have mercy on me." And finally, he gets the attention of Jesus. And Jesus approaches him, has him brought to him, and says, What would you like for me to do for you?" And it's fairly obvious, but he's willing to even state the obvious. Sometimes there is something unique that happens when we put words to what we really desire. And he says to Jesus, "I want to see." And the Bible says, instantly Jesus heals him. And a man that his whole life had been poor and blind is now stripped of the label blind, it's no longer true, and has the ability to do something about his poverty because he can see now. What's true about you now doesn't have to be true about you later. We move into chapter 19 of the book of Luke, and Jesus is now in Jericho. He's arrived. And in that town, there's a man named Zacchaeus. He is both rich and corrupt. Zacchaeus wants to see Jesus, but Zacchaeus is not well thought of. His corruption drives what people think about him. He's a tax collector, and he's even betrayed his own people. And he's also short. It's a label he's worn his entire life. So he knew that as Jesus comes, because there is this large crowd, he would not be able to see him. So Zacchaeus climbs up in a sycamore tree just so he can get a glimpse of who Jesus is, just so he can lay eyes on him for a moment. He's heard about how different he is, and he chooses to let the desire to see Jesus be greater than the embarrassment of what people have called him and what they've thought about him and who they know him as, and he climbs up in that tree. And it just so happens that as Jesus walks that way, he looks up into the tree, he pauses and stops and notices, he finds value in what other people have dismissed. And he says, Zacchaeus, I want you to come down. I want to go to your house for a meal today. I want to hang out with you. And the crowd, again, because of the label, they're astounded, especially the religious people. Astounded that Jesus would want to go to his house. I mean, can you imagine if you've built your life on being religious, if you've tried to keep the rules, if you've tried to make sure that everybody knows you keep the rules, if you're one of the religious people, don't you know for the religious leaders, if Jesus is going to anybody's house today, it's going to be mine. Because there are some religious people that have labeled themselves in a way that they almost feel better than God. In fact, they try to play God in your life and mine, and they spend their time labeling you. But Jesus ignores that, and he looks at Zacchaeus, and he says, you, I want to go home with you. I want to hang out with you. And he has a meal with Zacchaeus, and there's such a transformation in Zacchaeus. As he, in essence, commits his life to Christ, there's this radical transformation. What happens on the inside is going to affect the outside. And he tells Jesus some things he's going to do to make up some of the stuff he's done. And all of a sudden, the label, corrupt, is gone. Oh, there will still be people that call him that, but God sees him for who he is, because what's true about you now doesn't have to be true about you later. And so for some of you, in this season, the label that you carry, you just need to remember the fact that God's power is bigger than your past. God's grace is deeper than your worst moment. There may be a hint of truth in the labels you wear, but the reality is we know a God who's bigger than that. His love is broader than that. His grace is deeper than that. And what he's able to do in your life and mine when we turn to him is remove those labels and redefine who we are. You're not lazy. You don't have to be. You come to Christ and he can put some fire and ambition in your life to pursue him, and who knows what will happen. You don't have to live insecure, although you play that reel in your head over and over again about all the things you can't do and how other people are better, when in reality, the same spirit that raised Jesus from the dead lives inside you if you're a follower of Christ. It doesn't have to be like this forever. You can choose to stay stuck in what other people call you, or you can pause and step back and recognize what God, the God who invites us to call him Father, says about you. So what do? When you wear a label, what do you do when you walk through a season in life that you're labeled? You can name it something different. You can name it something different. I love the story of Jacob. It's found in the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis. Jacob encounters this lady that radically changes his forever. He meets Rachel, and from the time he lays eyes on Rachel, he has that feeling, she is the one. Guys, have you ever done that? Have you ever saw a girl and thought, man, she's the one? Don't tell her that too soon. She'll think you're a stalker. You got to let that go slowly. Get to know her a little bit. Keep that to yourself for the moment. Talk to Jesus about it, because you don't want to go to jail. But he looks at her and he says, she's the one. And isn't it crazy? Ladies, we don't understand this. If you like us too, it's cool and unique, and it's something, oh, isn't that special? If you don't like us, we're a stalker. I don't even understand how that works. But Genesis chapter 35, what happens is Jacob sees Rachel, and so he goes to her father and he says, hey, I've got to marry her. She's the one for me. And her father says, that's fine. You'll work for her for 7 years. would you work for your wife for 7 years? Don't answer me. That's inside. The amount of love, not just an emotional, oh my gosh, she's a hottie. It's got to be deep. 7 years. Hottie passes in a few moments. There's something unique about her. I'll work for her for 7 years. He agrees. And he goes to work and he works for 7 years. And at the end of 7 years, there's the wedding. And in that culture, when a wedding took place, you can't really see the bride. And so they're getting married and they have the honeymoon night. And he wakes up and he figures out that Laban, her father, had actually given him Rachel's sister Leah to marry. Now, Rachel, the scripture defines and describes as being attractive, having a good personality. The only thing it says about Leah is that she had weak eyes. So Rachel is smoking hot. Leah has a good personality. And Jacob thinks he's marrying Rachel, goes to bed with her, experiences the honeymoon, wakes up in the morning to recognize it's not Rachel, it's Leah. Probably the biggest oh crap moment in all of Scripture. Guys, have you ever gone to bed with Rachel and woken up with Leah? That's another sermon. So he goes back to their father and he says, hey man, I worked 7 years for Rachel and you gave me Leah. I want Rachel. And their father says, that's fine. It'll be another 7 years. And he says, okay. He works for 14 years. 14 years. Just because she is so precious to him and there's something about her. He has to be with her. That's who he wants to spend the rest of his life with. So 14 years could be 40 years. It really doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is I want to be with her. He does his time and they get married and they want to have kids, but they can't have kids. For some reason, it's not working. And they hear about other people getting pregnant and they hear those conversations. And man, he just looks at her and she gets pregnant and they have no problem. And for us, man, we're struggling. We're doing everything we know. We're praying and nothing's happening. And finally, they have a son. And once they have a son, they want another one. Rachel gets pregnant again in Genesis chapter 35. We see something very tragic happen. Rachel began to give birth and had great difficulty. And as she was having great difficulty in childbirth, the midwife said to her, "Don't despair, for you have another son. It's going to be okay no matter what happens. It's another boy." As she breathed her last, for she was dying, she named her son Benoni, but his father named him Benjamin. As she breathed her last, she's going to give birth to this baby. It's going to be a son, but she dies. What's interesting to me is Rachel named her son one thing, but the father named him something else. Rachel gives her son one name, but the father chooses a different name. You know, names matter. Angie and I have 4 kids. We now have 4 grandkids. We have 3 grandsons and a granddaughter. The granddaughter is about a month old, little tiny thing, but she is precious. And whoever wants to date her in about 30 years is going to have a tough time. But names matter. Little Charlotte, Truett, Everett, Wyatt, and Charlotte. And so I was reading and listening to some stuff this week about names, and there's some names. Have you ever noticed how names tend to be, in our culture, more and more creative? Have you ever noticed that? Like, it used to be Bob and Don and Ronald. I mean, it used to be, you know, pretty simple. Byron. I've hated my name my entire life. I answer more to Brian than I do Byron because that's what I'm called most of the time. Names matter. Listen, if you love the kid, think about the name. But some of the boys' names that are really creative, that are actually being used more and more, arrow, bobo, turgle. And if this happens to be your name or your middle name, I didn't know that. And by the way, I just said it's creative. I didn't say it was weird. I said it's creative. Blade. Now, Blade's not bad. If you want to get a tattoo of your name one day, Blade's not a bad one. And then there are girls' names that are creative, that are being used more and more. Fruity. And this next one, I'm not sure exactly how to say it, but it's being used more and more. Throw it up there. Now, if you're dyslexic, those last two letters really matter. Here's another one. Messiah. No pressure. Messiah. And then here's one. You may have seen this one. Just put it up there. Now, when you see that, you might think, la-ah, but it's actually la-dasha. You think about that. I mean, your whole life, you got to carry that thing around. It's on your bank account, driver's license, credit cards. It's everywhere. Names mean something. And so Rachel, in this moment, names her son one thing. But the father named him something else. As Rachel breathed her last, for she was dying, she named her son Benoni. Benoni means son of my sorrow. And there's some reality. It's a true statement. I can't think of a greater sorrow. She's given birth and she's holding her baby and she's about to die. She will never feed him. She will miss his first steps. She won't be the one to console him when he comes home from school and somebody has said something ugly to him or labeled him. She won't be able to be for him in those moments when he wants to date, to share with her the female perspective and how girls think. It's a moment of intense sorrow, and so she just calls it what it is, and she names her son Benoni, son of my sorrow. What may be true in this moment won't be true forever, however. What may be true in the moment won't be true forever, because who else was filled with sorrow? Jacob, the father. It's easy when you read the text to casually read over and think, well, he was just one of those guys, maybe from the south, that thought he would have the final say in how the name would go, and so he's going to get to name. He doesn't like the name she picked, and he's just going to change it. That's not what's taking place. Because the only person hurting more than her, I would assume, is him. Remember, this is the lady he worked 14 years for. He cherishes her. He knows that she is breathing her last. So in renaming the son, he is not trying to be cruel. He's not trying to humiliate her. He's not trying to take some stand and create an argument. The father took what was and he named it something different. What did he name him? He named him Benjamin. What does Benjamin mean? Before I tell you that, Jacob had a pattern of taking what was and naming it something different. Jacob was the one who would wrestle with God and begin to plead at the end of wrestling with God all night long, you've got to do something for me, and God changes his name. Jacob had experienced the change of a name because Jacob meant deceiver, and God said, your name will now be Israel, which means my God prevails. So he had experienced the power of what it means to have a name changed. He even changed the name of the place where it happened. It's now called this. It used to be called that. So Jacob understood what could take place when your name is changed, and he said, his name will be Benjamin, son of my right hand. I know, Rachel, you want to name him Benoni, son of my sorrow, and this is the most grief-filled moment I've ever lived. But his name's going to be Benjamin, son of my right hand, which in the Jewish culture implied significant blessing. I don't understand it. I just know that as you read the pages of Scripture and you walk through this thing called life, I can look back on my own history and my own life, and some of the greatest blessings have come from some of the most painful seasons. You don't get to choose what comes into your life, but you do get to choose what you call it. You don't get to choose what comes into your life, but you do get to choose what you call it. Benjamin, son of my right hand. Jacob says, I don't want to spend the rest of my life every time I look at him because I'm going to think of you. Everything, the way he acts, the way he looks at people. Even though he will have spent no time with you, he's going to have aspects of your personality, your mannerisms, your imprint will be all over him. He is your son. And so when I look at him and I remember you, it's going to be in a fond way because I was blessed to be the guy to get to work for you for 14 years. I was blessed. I could have been born at any other time in history, in any other place. It could have been that I would have never seen your face and never known you. So while I would not have written the story this way and I would not have chosen this moment, I consider myself blessed to get to have the time that I've had with you. And now as a result of that time, we have a son. And I will miss you terribly every single moment, but I consider myself blessed because I was yours and you are mine. And now we have Benjamin. What may look like son of my sorrow could become son of my right hand. Because what's true in this moment doesn't have to be true forever. So while Jacob can do nothing about what's happening, he can make the choice to lean into faith and to say, I'm going to do the best I can to view this from God's perspective, and I can't comprehend all of that because His ways are higher than our ways, but as best I know how, I'm going to shift perspective. I can't choose what comes into my life, but I can choose what I call it, and I can focus on the burden, and I can focus on the pain, and I can focus on the sorrow, and I can focus on all the negatives. And when you focus on the negatives, you become negative. So in choosing to think about what God is doing and choosing to lean into grace, it's not that he's going to live in denial. He walked that path. He felt that loss. It's not that he's going to pretend it never happened. He's just making the deliberate choice in how he thinks about it and what he thinks about it, and ultimately the foundation of that being, I'm going to trust God with this moment, this season, this loss. What other option do you have? And because of that, what God does in Jacob's life is profound. See, what your enemy thought would stop you could be the very thing God uses to strengthen you. There will be some things that come into your life, and maybe you're living that, some things that come into my life that the enemy intends to stop you in your tracks. The pain is too great. The sorrow is too deep. And in this Christmas season, you feel sorrow at a different level than you've ever felt it. The last time you felt it was last Christmas. Because Christmas, there's something about it that it magnifies things. And you carry that. And some of the sorrow is from what you've been labeled and what you've carried your whole life and how you've thought about you because of what other people said about you. You can't control what comes into your life and you can't control what they say about you, but you can control and choose what you name it and what you say about it. If you don't like what you've been called, name it something different. Because names matter. You don't get to choose what comes into your life, but you do get to choose what you call it. And what's true of you today doesn't have to be true of you forever. You are loved by God. That's truth. If you're a Christ follower, you're a child of God. That's truth. But you may say, I don't feel like that. I don't feel good enough. Can I tell you a secret? I wear some labels. You want me to tell you the labels that I choose not to focus on or think about? Unworthy. Unqualified. Inadequate. Every single time someone calls me, Pastor, I could feel all of those, which in so many ways are true. But I choose to think about how blessed I am to get to be a part of what God's doing in this unique community of faith. I choose to think about how God loves me in spite of me. It is mind-blowing to me that God, knowing me fully, would say, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you. So there's this mental shift that takes place. I'm not going to think about who I am because something has happened in reality in my life that's bigger than who I am. In myself, I am unworthy. In myself, I am unqualified. If it's just me, I am completely inadequate. But there was this moment in my life where I surrendered my life to Christ and I asked Him to come into my life and forgive my sin and change me. And I made this commitment that you're going to be my God in a very personal way. And in that moment, God, in a way that only God can, chooses to look down at me and not see the unworthy, unqualified, inadequate. He looks at me through what Jesus did for me, and all He sees is that I am His child. So you can live your life, and I can live my life, letting other people label us and labeling ourselves. Or you can live, not in a fairy tale, but in the reality of who God says you are. You are valued so much, He invites you to call Him Father. He invites you to come to Him with whatever the sorrow is, whatever it is you're struggling with, and approach His throne with boldness. It means you can say anything you want to say and be as honest as you want to be. And why not be honest? God knows how we feel anyway. And how you feel and how you struggle and the sorrow you carry and how little you may think of you in certain aspects doesn't hinder or change what God thinks of you at all. You have so much value. He sent His Son and let Him die for you. You don't get to choose what comes into your life. You do get to choose what you call it. Would you pray with me this morning?